I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. And we are done with our recess today. It's about 1:40, May 8th, 2007. Here at the table this afternoon is co-chair Senator Hoffman, Senator Huggins, Senator Elton, Senator Thomas, Senator Dyson, and myself, Senator Stedman. We're going to have a little change in the original posting. This morning we had posted that we were going to take up workers' compensation records, House Bill 121, along with House Bill 219, the Kenai Gasification Project. We're going to move those back till tomorrow morning. This afternoon, we're going to work on SB 104, the Alaska Gasoline Inducement Act, better known as AGIA by the acronym. And then we're going to go on to House Bill 109, Disclosures in Ethics, Bribery, and Retirement. We'll take that up. I would like to remind everybody to please turn off their pagers and their cell phones and other interesting items that interfere with our speaker systems. And to start off dealing with Senate Bill 104, again, the Gasoline Inducement Act, or better known as AGIA, it's been several days since we've worked on this bill. And today we're going to begin with a presentation by Mr. William Mogul from Saul Ewing, LLP, regarding FERC's regulation of interstate natural gas pipelines. Mr. Mogul is a consultant working with legislative budget and audit for us to help us through these technical issues. After he's done with his presentation, we have a work draft that will be a CS as soon as the drafters get it in a proper format. We'll bring that forward on the table and we'll have the administration walk through it. But with that, I'd like to have Mr. Mogul come forward and he will please introduce himself, who he works for, who he represents, and then he has a presentation for us this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. My name is William Mogul. I'm with the law firm Saul Ewing. The chairman has described the basis of me being here. I've been asked to talk a little bit about how the FERC regulatory process works over interstate natural gas pipelines, and I have a short summary overlook of how that happens. I would make a couple of comments at the outset. I recognize the credibility of saying I'm here from Washington and I've come to help you, but with that caveat, I do want to emphasize that the regulation of interstate natural gas pipelines may be slightly unfamiliar to many around this table in many respects because it's significantly different from the regulation of oil pipelines by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Most importantly, that the Natural Gas Act's primary objective is to protect consumers. The Oil Pipeline Act does not have that as the statutory obligation of the agency or the statute. So I wanted to make that point at the outset, and if I can work this, again, that points out the design of the Natural Gas Act, which was passed in 1938, was to protect consumers. And there are several aspects of that statute, which I'm going to slowly walk through, which are designed to protect anti-competitive, discriminatory, or preferential treatment for any shipper, whether that shipper is affiliated or not affiliated with the interstate gas pipeline. And what will follow are the various mechanisms that the FERC has by way of statute and regulation to ensure this kind of open access, non-preferential treatment. Mr. Chairman, I would take questions at any time. With all due modesty, I put this up. The chairman asked me how I had time when he saw an early version of this to write 17 books, and I'm not sure how I did it, but generally one page a day is 350 pages a year. The most important statutory provision dealing with interstate natural gas pipelines is the certificate process at FERC, and I'm sure you're all familiar with that. Generally, before, and unlike oil pipelines, before an interstate natural gas pipeline can commence service or commence construction and then service, it first has to obtain a certificate of public convenience and necessity from the FERC, which examines a multitude of issues. They're set forth in extensive detail in the FERC's regulations and a body of case law. The pipeline has to make a showing that there's a public benefit to the construction and operation of that pipeline. And that standard considers numerous things, including environmental. One of the significant things, I think, and this is by no means intended to be all-inclusive, is that under the FERC's authority and the regulations, it can condition a certificate, which is a term of art, which means that it can impose a condition upon the certificate which was not intended by the applicant. And one of those conditions, which you might think is relevant, and I do, is that the certificate can be conditioned, so construction must be completed by a date certain. You don't get a certificate and can sit on it for a duration of many years and then decide to commence. The commission has that authority to condition. An applicant applies for a certificate and all the provisions the applicant thinks is appropriate in terms of rates, terms and service, location, design, etc. And the FERC has three choices. They can grant the certificate as sought by the applicant. They can grant the certificate and then condition the certificate, i.e. imposing conditions upon the applicant. If that occurs, the applicant is not required to accept the certificate and can challenge the FERC administratively and then in the Court of Appeals. The last alternative, of course, FERC, is they can deny the certificate in its entirety. Also, I think important under this certificate authority of the Commission, a pipeline, once having a certificate, cannot expand its service, its facilities, or terminate, or what the statute calls abandon the service, without obtaining prior approval of FERC. So there's a very pervasive, extensive regulatory oversight of interstate gas pipelines prior to construction and during operations. The next, I was going to say hammer, but I think if FERC were here, they wouldn't like hammer. The next regulatory oversight that FERC has is over the rates that are charged by interstate natural gas pipeline companies, and you're all familiar with that, and I've been in this body for several days, and I've heard a lot of esoteric discussion of rolled-in rates, but that's part of the FERC's authority. They approve rates, rate changes, terms and conditions, and gas pipelines. If under the Natural Gas Act, if a rate goes into effect, it goes into effect subject to refund. The FERC hasn't acted on the rate, and then the FERC can order refunds. In addition to waiting for the applicant to make rate proposals, the FERC can also, on its own initiative or on motion of certain parties, investigate a current rate, and it also has refund authority at that time. Rates, obviously, and you've heard this term, must be just and reasonable, and may be rejected and refunded.